There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Before my like singing career really took off, I was just having a blog like every other girl did. At least in Sweden, everybody had a blog.
Really?
Like everybody.
What kind of things did you put on the blog?
It was like the OG Instagram. It was just like, hey, like chilling. And then you would write a little like, I was at an interview, podcast today, it was great. Blah, 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 blah. Just, you know,
yeah.
Like a Facebook mom.
Yeah.
Huge, long caption and a lot of pictures.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to Love Lives, a podcast from The Independent where I, Olivia Petter, will be speaking to different guests about the different loves of their lives, the stories behind them, and what that love has taught them about themselves and their place in the world. Today, I am honoured to be joined by the brilliant Zara Larsson. She is one of the biggest pop stars working today. She is known for her energising pop anthems and record-breaking hits like Never Forget You and Lush Life. She has been nominated for Brits and MTV EMAs and has just released her latest single, End of Time. She was recently described as entering her icon era by Vogue Scandinavia. All this, and she is just 25. I cannot wait to talk to her all about her career so far, her music, and the different loves of her life. So, hello, Zara.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining me. It's honestly like rattling off all the things you've done. It's crazy to think that.
Good intro.
Thank you. Like I said in the intro, you kind of just released your latest single, End of Time. I know that the music video for this one was really special for you and it kind of took you a while to write this song. And in the video, we kind of see you with this small blonde girl who looks like a younger version of you in what looks like a somewhat unstable home life. But I know that the song is about kind of visiting your younger self as an adult and all of the things that you would kind of talk to them about. Tell us why this song is so important to you and, you know, what your vision was for that special video.
So, first of all, I want to start off by saying I unfortunately didn't write the song. I worked with Rick Knowles a lot on this album and Casey Smith, who wrote the song.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a few songs coming out together, but the one day that I wasn't in the studio, they were just in there together, them two. And then when I got back, they were like, we want to play you a song. And it was End of Time. And I think the song in itself is just a very passionate love song, which is about loving someone until the end of time. Quite dramatic. And because I still want to be a part of creating my story in a way. So I don't always write my songs. I try to. I think it's really fun. But everything is so visual these days as well. So because I didn't write the song, I really wanted to write the story of the video and the visual story. And I just figured instead of having, you know, me and like a boy and we would love each other, you know, I wanted to do something else. And I wanted to have, I wanted to portray one of the strongest loves in my life, which is the love for performing and singing and dancing. And I've just always felt that in me since I was, I can't even remember, since I was so young. And just portraying me in my bedroom, kind of escaping everyday life, just being in my own world in front of the mirror, and imagining and visualizing being on stage as I would grow older, it would just be all of my days would consist of that. So that's kind of the story of the video. A younger version of me, or just a younger girl having big dreams, kind of living the life. We wanted to portray like kind of a family home, which isn't perfect because I don't think any family is perfect. Mm. But I didn't want it to be too sad, but I wanted it to feel relatable. And, you know, just something that I felt growing up. So it felt like a really nice story. And I'm happy we went that way because performing is definitely one of my biggest loves in life.
Mm. And because of the message of the song and the video, like going back to your younger self and kind of, or just, you know, anyone's younger self and telling a young child, you know, I don't know, giving them some sort of thing to cling on to when things are difficult at home or wherever. Do you have any idea what you would want to say to your younger self, maybe before you kind of entered this industry? Because I know you were so young.
Yeah.
But if you could go back now and kind of say something to that, like, pre, you know, professional musician you, yeah, as a kid, what would you say?
Honestly, I don't know if I have anything to say. I was so strong and confident as a kid. I just knew exactly what I wanted to do. Nobody could tell me otherwise. And sometimes I feel, you know, my grandma, she passed away not too long ago, and we were looking at her stuff that she had in her house, just, you know, cleaning out her apartment. And she had these photo albums, but they were just filled with cutouts from, like, interviews that I had done, which is so cute. Because these days, like, I wouldn't do that. If I would save an interview, maybe you print screen.
Yeah.
You just have it in your phone. But she, you know, she's old school. So she cut out every single interview or every single picture that she ever saw of me in a magazine. And it could be a good article or a bad article, but she would save everything. And as I was, you know, flipping through those pages and just looking at myself and seeing an interview from me being 14 or 15 when I was just releasing my first original song, I felt inspired by myself, by the younger version of me, because everything was so clear. It was just so obvious, mm-hmm, that I had this one thing that I wanted to do, and I wasn't gonna let anybody tell me otherwise. And sometimes now when I'm 25, I can feel myself more, not doubting, but, you know, you realize that life is hard and tricky and it's not black and white. And when you're young, you have your whole life in front of you, and I still got time, I know that. But it's different, like, feeling, you know, I'm grown. Like, I have responsibilities. I have, I got to take care of myself. But I don't know if I have anything to say to my younger self more than, go girl, you know?
It's so sweet to hear you talk like that, because I think it's so rare that we get to hear that insight into that total kind of blind optimism, yeah, that we all kind of have as kids.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we're growing up and like, I want to be a pop star.
Yeah.
But like, you actually went and did it so yeah, young. So I want to kind of go back a bit and ask you how you made it happen, how you got into this industry. I mentioned you started, yeah, when you were like 10 because you won a talent contest in, mm-hmm, Sweden. But tell us about that and how that kind of, you know, kickstarted everything else.
Yeah, I mean, actually, as we're speaking today, I just saw a tweet saying, like, it was 15 years ago that she won, you know, somebody tagged me on Twitter. And I was like, that is insane. Like, 15 years ago, time flies. So I kind of started my career, I guess you would say, on that show, like, Sweden's Got Talent. And I was so excited to just be an artist, you know? But as we all know, winning a competition like that doesn't necessarily guarantee you anything.
Yeah.
It's just a show, really. It's just like good TV. Yeah. And then the next year, there's a new winner. And then the year after that, there's a new winner. So, but I walked in and I was like, okay, boom, it's happening. You know, and after that, I won, which was so exciting and so amazing. I was ready to, like, get to work. And nobody wanted to sign me. I went to all the record labels and they were like, you're too young.
You were 11, right?
Yeah. Which makes sense now. But I was stressing and I was so sad and I was like, my career is over. I'm never going to be anything. I feel like I was more stressed back then than I am now. Because,
yeah,
I just wanted to, like, travel places, perform, be on stage. That's where my true love's at. Like, be on stage, entertain people, see them have a good time, and all of that. So it was very stressful for me. But then at 14, I got signed. I don't know if the talent show actually helped me out per se, but I guess life is a chain of events. So me and my mom actually went and watched the Swedish Idol competition. So we were in the crowd. And then during the commercial breaks, you could go up to the judges and like get their autographs. So we did that. And then my mom was like, do you recognize her? Do you recognize this girl? And I was like, shut up, mom. And one of the judges, Laila Bagge, she was like, yeah, of course I know you. I think you're amazing. You're so talented. So, and then my mom was like, can we get your email or something? And she gave out her email. So we emailed her and we didn't really think she was gonna reply back, but she actually did. And she worked with me for a year. She was actually the one who took me and saw record, because I didn't have any contacts to, like my family isn't in music at all. I didn't grow up like in a musical family or people with connections. So it was basically my mom who was just being a little cheeky at this, you know, commercial break in the live studio. And we emailed her, she got back to us, and she introduced me to my label, 10, in Sweden, which was an independent kind of small label. And they took me on at 13, still very, you know, they were like, oh, you're very young, but we could work for you, we could work with you. Mm-hmm. And then at 15, I released my first song, and it went so well. And I think it was on Cover, it's called, and it was just released in Sweden first, and then it just kind of organically traveled down in Europe. And I just remember posting the video for it on YouTube, which was kind of like a one shot, camera was still, I was just singing into the mic in the studio, like budget was zero. And it just kind of took off. And I think it was before YouTube had those algorithms and stuff, so whatever was kind of trending was on this like start page, you know, and then it took off on the radio. And I think I was just really, really lucky. Like it was just happening. The right thing was happening at the right time for me at that moment, because I could have posted and just had like 43 views,
yeah,
my family and my friends, but something happened there. And it was obviously like a beautiful song. I didn't write that, but it was the first song that I heard that I was like, oh yeah, I'm putting this out. And I also knew, I'm very thankful for 10, working with them, because they really listened to me. Mm-hmm. It had drums in the beginning. It's a completely different song. And I was like, let's take out the drums. I just want this to be a ballad, which is kind of different from what I do today. Like if you've heard my music, you probably wouldn't think of like, oh, the ballad girl. But, you know, I started out really just take out the drums. And they were like, no, we can't do this. No one's releasing songs without any drums. And I was just like, well, that's how I want it, you know? So we just kind of did it. And it went really well. So I think luck combined with having people that I worked with that were listening to me. Because at the end of the day as well, like, if I did release it and it didn't do well, I always say this, but if you do something you are happy about and proud of, you can't really lose.
Yeah, I think anything with anything creativity based, I think you have, yeah, to just ultimately let the universe take control of the success, yeah, of it, and just think, as long as I feel proud of this, mm-hmm, then like you said, then it's a success.
Because if you release something that you don't like, and then if it goes well, oh, I always knew I loved that song. Blah, blah, blah. But if it doesn't,
yeah,
then it's like flop. Yeah, like, yeah, you know what I mean? Then you feel terrible. But I'm so happy that they were always like hearing me out, listening to me, because I've heard some nightmare stories about record labels just trying to really shape a person into what they're not. Mm-hmm. But even being so young, and then through 10, the label in Sweden, the record company, they licensed the music to Sony worldwide. So I got signed to Epic, and I was thrown in rooms with like amazing writers, amazing stylists, amazing choreographers, amazing, everyone was so professional.
And you're like, still a teenager.
Still a teenager. Yeah, like 15, 16 at this point. So maybe 17. And it wasn't like they were, again, like everything just became so much bigger at this point. So it was this, not this familiar, like family style, you know, independent label. It was like a big machine. And I don't think they were trying to change me. I think they were just genuinely trying to help me. But when you are being put in like a room with, let's say, like five writers who all have number ones, it just made me feel like, what can I say that will be better than anything you say? Like, I became a little intimidated. Mm-hmm. And it was just kind of hard for me to like, it was harder for me to think, what do I like? What do I like? Because I trust you guys. So if you say this is like amazing, then it probably like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think it's the antithesis of what this all starts out mm-hmm. as, right? Because like, I think with any creative exercise that you do, whether it's, you know, songwriting, novel writing, you know, screenwriting, whatever, it starts off as a creative endeavor, something yeah. that is true to you. But then the further along you get and the more success you get, the more you're constantly reminded that this is a business. Yeah. This is like a commercial enterprise. Yeah. And you will have all these people in big rooms kind of telling you, well, this is what's going to make you yeah. money. And this is, yeah. and it's like, but that's not what I started to do no. this for. So I think it's probably quite hard to reconcile those two things, particularly when you're so young.
Totally. And I do want success and I wanted success. And I have always had huge respect for like authorities or just older people, especially always being the youngest person in the room, which is no longer true in every scenario. Because sometimes I walk in and I'm like, oh, I would love to write with this person. I just think they're amazing. And then I'm like, they're fucking 18. Like, you know what I mean? It's so wild. But growing up was just always like the baby. But again, I think I had... I was still with 10 and they would always back me up. They would always be like, whatever you want to do. And I think that was really, really important for me. But because I didn't start off writing. Mm-hmm. My love is performing. But then after a while, I just figured like, of course, I want to be part of that process too. Mm-hmm. But now I've also gotten to the point where now I've done it for a few years and I've just realized that I don't work well with 10 people in the room. And I don't care how many hits you have. I want to sit with somebody that I feel really comfortable with, comfortable that I could share my like thoughts and ideas. And, you know, I don't want it to be more than two people.
Mm. And it sounds like you had such a strong sense of yourself, which I think is so important when you're kind of thrust into those environments as a young girl, as a teenage girl in particular. I know you kind of said that you didn't really have anyone trying to kind of morph you into a version of yourself that you weren't, but were there ever any people you encountered, because it's so common in the industry, or at least it used to be, for women to be kind of subjected to so much criticism and sort of manipulation about like their appearance and yeah. what they wear and all
they
that
were
kind
trying.
Of stuff.
I think if I was not backed up by my Swedish record company, it would have been a completely different story. And again, I think these companies, they're not going out of their way to like purposely be mean. Mm-hmm. They just want to make money. Like they, and then, in the, and that's like kind of, maybe they sometimes could be mean, but they're not doing it for the purpose of being mean. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think, I definitely had to really put my foot down in certain situations, and it's certain things have been very uncomfortable, but then it has been very nice to like look to my right or look to my left and see like, you guys got me. Mm-hmm. Because if I didn't have that, and if my mom, like my mom was in the room with me all the time, like wherever I went, and she just, not recently, but when I turned like 21-ish, she kind of backed off a little bit. But I always have someone around me, even in sessions, unless I know the person very well, because I have been in enough situations where I'm like, I'm really not comfortable right now. And you're telling me things that I should do or shouldn't do, or it's just straight up very inappropriate. Or I think a lot of people who have power in the industry, they know they do. They know they have power. And a lot of people abuse that. Yeah. And I think that's what kind of turns them on. Not necessarily because they really want to sleep with you. They just want you to know that I have the power to make you uncomfortable right now. And that's what I'm going to do. You know what I mean?
Do you still, I mean, because I, you know, when I talk to anyone in the public eye in any way who started out very young as a woman, like whether they are an artist or a model or, you know, it's like the gears kind of change when you get very commercially successful and very kind of, and, you know, very famous. But when you're younger, it's like people think that they can still kind of exploit you and take advantage of you. And you hear these stories in the music industry all the time. Does that still happen? Did you notice a time when that kind of stopped happening? And have you ever been like, you know, you said you've experienced like people saying inappropriate things and making you feel really uncomfortable. Have you ever kind of gone to the next step of like reporting behavior or like complaining in any kind of formal way?
No, but it's so fucked up that some of the things that have happened have been so obvious, and it has happened like in front of other people. And
what kind of thing? Like inappropriate comments?
We could like be sitting at a dinner.
Yeah.
And there's all these people that I know and that everybody knows. And then it could be like, you know, somebody's putting a hand on my thigh or saying like, I'm going to come to your hotel room. And I'm going to do like what, getting like way too close and personal, keep touching. And it's like, you all see this, like this is happening right in front of you guys, but no one says anything because it's not to the point where if I would have gone to the police and said what?
Yeah.
It's not illegal. It's not criminal. But those like minor things, when you stack them on top of each other and it like happens, and it's just casual, you know, it's not that deep,
which is what they would say if
you know
complained.
What I mean, so it's all these like very gray scale, or if you're in the studio with people and it's like you and one other person there, it feels like whoa, you know, like something could really happen here. But no, I've never reported anything, and I feel like that's, they know that you can't. And yeah, if I didn't have, there are certain people I know, like, I would never be alone with you. Like, I just know I would never be in a room alone with you.
And that's what I'm saying. Because there are certain people that other people say, don't be alone.
And yeah, and I just know. Like, I just know the vibe. And I would just always bring my manager. I would always have my mom. Like, I would have somebody there to make sure that I'm safe.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of, and I'm lucky enough that I've been able to have that, because a lot of people, you know, they travel far. And you end up in a room and you just want to make your dreams come true and you do whatever it takes. Yeah. And then you're like put in this uncomfortable situation, and sometimes they make you feel like, well, if you want it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So it's crazy to think that it, because yeah, it sounds like such a cliche,
it
almost
does,
for lack of a better word, but it, of course it happens.
It does. Like, it does happen. And I think it's obviously not restricted to the music industry. I think this happens everywhere for a lot of women. But it definitely is sad, because you are just playing with somebody's dream and their like integrity. I don't know. It's a very strange industry and world for sure. And especially, I wouldn't really say I've gotten to the point where people wouldn't try me. I think it actually changed starting in the industry so young. I think it definitely, I felt such a shift from when I was 17 to 18, because okay, now I'm legal,
right.
You know,
yeah,
which is so creepy. But
so that almost invited other.
Yeah.
Kind of,
which is like, you're a fucking old man. Like, why are you even looking at me like that? But I really felt a shift as turning 18. It was like, whoa. Yeah. But now I've just made my circle smaller. And I know that there's, of course, amazing people in the industry too, and great people to work with. But just for, you know, my own kind of protection and my own like peace, just want to keep it small. Making an album, it's been really nice to have a small group of people that I've been writing most of it with. And it's also nice because the more you work with somebody, then the closer you can get to them and the more comfortable you are, and the more you can share and make it just more authentic.
I want to ask about one of your other recent singles, Can't Tame Her, because it's kind of alluding to what we've been talking about. The lyrics are like, you can't tie her down, you can't change her. And I think it reflects how outspoken you've been throughout your career and how, you know, like I said, like self-assured you are. And, you know, you have spoken out about issues in the music industry and, you know, political issues. And a lot of musicians don't do that because, you know, fear of retribution or whatever, or alienating fans. What is it that makes you feel compelled to speak out against something? And is there anything in particular that, like, one issue that you feel gets you particularly kind of riled up in a way and you think, this is something I should use my platform to talk about?
Well, I've just always been a very opinionated person. And before my, like, singing career really took off, I was just having a blog like every other girl did. At least in Sweden, everybody had a blog.
Really?
Like,
everybody. What kind of things did you put on the blog?
It was like the OG Instagram. It was just like, hey, like, chilling. And then you would write a little, like, I was at an interview, podcast today, it was great. Blah, 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 blah. Just, you know,
yeah.
Like a Facebook mom.
Yeah.
Huge, long caption and a lot of pictures.
Yeah.
So I would have that. And then as I would grow older from being, you know, 13 to maybe 16, like a lot of stuff was happening in me internally and externally. I realized, like, oh, wow, the world is, like, unequal. It never really dawned on me because I was never thinking about that stuff. I was just, like, a kid. And then I grew up. I changed school. I went to the Royal Swedish Ballet School before, which was just run by girls. It was majority girls. So we were just having this sisterhood kind of vibe. And then changed school. It was so different. And I just realized that... feminism is so necessary and important. And I think I got really sucked into it by these amazing writers in Sweden, and specifically one person who's extremely radical. And she was just saying, like, I hate men. And I was like, hell yeah. Because as I was starting to talk more about the importance of equality and, you know, my new thoughts that I had just found, as I was talking about that on my blog, I got a lot of negative comments towards that. And they would usually come from men. And I would just be like, why are you so, I don't know, like, mad about that? Why are you mad at me for saying that it exists rather than, you know, helping me and other women work towards it not existing? And that would just kind of fuel the fire to to what I was feeling. Because I think also being a teenager, everything's very black and white. You have these strong emotions. You are finding yourself. You're finding your kind of purpose in a way. But also your belief system is really being molded. Mm-hmm. And I just found my voice in a lot of strong people on social media. And I think usually what I was writing about and how I feel is very reactionary. So it wouldn't be just out of nowhere. It would be to a response on a comment from a man. Or it would be, you know, I mean, people are saying this now, but it really wasn't like a mainstream thing. I think when men hate women, they beat us, they murder us, they rape us. And when women hate men, it's just a reaction saying, I hate that you are doing this to us.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because to some people it does seem really black and white and really simplistic, but there is a truth in it. And I think the truth in it is, like you said, it's the rage and the rage at the injustice of all of the things that you listed.
Because it's hard to swallow that. Like, I was an angry teenager, and that made me so mad to realize how the world looks and how the world functions. And the fact that, you know, I just saw in the taxi on the way here, this woman being stabbed to death in India. And it's all these guys just around watching. it happened and it just made me so mad. But really what it makes me is it makes me sad. Mm-hmm. It is so sad. But that emotion is like, is too hard to walk around with all the time. So to really make something happen, I think anger is more of a emotion to get things going. It's more of a, you know, let's get to action. If I would just walk around thinking about all the terrible things that are happening to women and be sad, I don't even know if I could get out of bed. Like, it's really, it's just tragic. So it fueled like an anger in me, and I just wanted to do something about it. And I wanted to create like a debate or a discussion. Actually, no, that was never my goal. It just became a discussion and a topic. And for a long time, people were talking way more about what I was saying on my blog than about my music. But that was just how I felt. And I think now I don't have my blog anymore, and I'm still standing very strong in my opinions. And obviously it's like, oh, I don't hate on men, but like I hate the patriarchy and I hate what it does to the world and all of that. But I'm very proud, and I'm looking back, like I was looking through the photo album that my grandma had. I'm looking back at it and I'm like, I was just, how could I be so strong? Because now when I see like stuff on Twitter and people just like argue with me, I have no energy.
There's no point either. No. Because it's just, there are people on there that just want to fight, and they're just looking for someone.
Yeah.
You know, they're really angry. They're really sad. They're really lonely. Yeah. They're looking for that channel and
so
someone to
true.
Kind of project all their stuff onto. And all you're going to do by engaging is just feeding their own misery.
Yeah.
And then subsequently your own, because and they'll fight about
like,
things
at you.
I would
wake up in the middle of the night for a long time and just like be so anxious. And like, what are they writing to me? Because they were like, it was really tough at one point. And a majority of these men that were just hating me were like older than my dad. And I'm like, how can you be so bothered by a teenager? It blows my mind. But it kind of proves my point that it's like, wow, you just hate a girl who has a voice and who is expressing herself. But like you say, especially on the internet, it's just really hard to have a nuanced debate. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's kind of impossible.
I think it is kind of impossible, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It would be so much better if we could have a nuanced debate. But it just, that doesn't lend itself to internet culture, you know. But, you know, look at something like TikTok, which is, you know, the most popular kind of social channel at the moment. It's all about that, like, quick, instant, like, 10-second video.
Yeah.
So it's like you can't have a political debate in 10 seconds. You can't make a complicated point in 10 seconds.
Totally. So, it's tricky.
Yeah.
But I am applauding, and I am just, you know, in awe of the people who are still having that energy. And I really want to thank, like, a lot of people who had my back during that time in my life, because it felt like it was hard. And I don't think I realized how hard it was since I was in it. But then when I got out of it and I started to like, okay, like I'm not gonna write on my blog, and it wasn't an active choice, it was just I just stopped updating, literally updated, and then it just phased out. And now I look back at that time and I'm like, how did I even have the strength to just do that? I
when
don't
was
know
it that you put it to one side,
kind of like at 20. Yeah. And the OGs, the people who know me, especially in Sweden, like they know me, they know what I think about things, and I'm still firm in my opinions and beliefs. But
well, you are. I mean, the next thing I was going to ask you about, because I think it reflects the choices you made in your career, was that you recently did a deal with Sony and your own label to kind of own all of your own music.
Yeah.
And when I read that, it reminded me of what Taylor Swift did when she kind of tried to buy back all of her stuff and is now re-releasing her albums. I think to someone outside of the industry, people would be like, wait, why don't you own all your own music already? And also, why is it so important as a woman in this industry to own your music?
I mean, that's a great question. Why does an artist own their music? Mm-hmm. And it's so sad. And I think
the Taylor Swift situation is really what inspired. So I was talking about 10 earlier, and they, the guy who owned the company, Ola, he wanted to sell it. And he called me. I was the first person he called to ask, are you interested in buying your masters, owning your music? And I said, of course I am. And not a lot of people get that opportunity. And if he wasn't up for selling it, you know, it would still be, it wouldn't be mine right now. But it's such a weird thing that you make this music and you sing on these songs and you make this art and it's still not really yours to have control over, because he had just seen what happened with Taylor Swift, and he was just mortified and felt like, I don't want that to be a thing. And I'd rather go out being a nice person, because he got money, like he's fine. A lot of people are just, they're just greedy, and sometimes people sell to investment capital companies and people who are not interested in music at all, but it's just like, it's like buying a stock, but then you're also buying somebody's whole life and all the time and energy they put into that. So he was just like, I never want the Taylor Swift thing to be a thing. Do you want it? And I said, absolutely, I do. Thank you so much. And I wish that could happen for more artists, of course. And I think even for the songs that I didn't write, like End of Time or even Lush Alive, I didn't write that track, but I loved it. And it's such a part of my identity as an artist. And that song is me. You know what I mean? That song is like one of the biggest things that have happened to me in my life. So the fact that I have control over it and no one can kind of take it away from me, or a record company can say, oh, well, we're just gonna, this person wants to, like Drake calls out, he's like, I want to sample Lush Life. That's still like my work, but I wouldn't get a dime from that because I wasn't creating it. But now I feel like I have it in my home, I have it in my house, and it's mine, and it's my baby, and I can take care of it, and I can kind of have control and power over what I want my music to be like, or go towards, or if it's in a movie, if it's in this, because that song is me. It's like an extension of me as an artist. So I'm just really happy that I got that opportunity, and I just feel like a powerful businesswoman.
Yeah, but it is. Know? It is. It's a powerful business decision. Yeah. And it's crazy that that isn't the norm, that people, totally. You know, these huge stars release yeah. these songs and they have no control over where they go or power. How they're used.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
God, there's so much else I want to ask you. Okay, one more thing before we move on to your loves. In an interview with British Vogue, you were asked to cite one of your favorite quotes, and you yeah. gave this one from Lady Gaga, which I'm going to read. Some women choose to follow men and some women choose to follow their dreams. If you're wondering which way to go, remember that your career will never wake up and tell you that it doesn't love you anymore.
Yep.
Such a great quote. Why did you choose that?
I just think it's so good. I don't feel like it needs much. It doesn't need an explanation. Yeah. It's very straight on. But I think for a lot of women, a lot of young girls out there, the biggest thing should be to follow your goals and dreams mm-hmm. and what you want to do in life and how you want to live your life. I think to cater to a man is a little dangerous mm-hmm. and you never know where you're going to end up. I think to just have it going for yourself and to live life in your true purpose. And then if a man comes along, amazing. Mm-hmm. Good for you. Whoever comes along, whoever you want to date, good for you. But it's so unpredictable, isn't it? And
it can happen without you realizing that you're totally. Doing it, because it's what we're kind of socially conditioned yeah. to do.
And I feel like totally. And I feel like for a lot of people these days, sometimes I see on TikTok like how to, I don't know what's up with my algorithm, but it's like, you know, the lady, oh, what's her name? Sprinkle Sprinkle. It's like, how to date a rich man, sprinkle, sprinkle. And I'm like, interesting. Because in a way, I see this new wave of young girls wanting to like, well, I'm a girl, I'm amazing, and I should be treated as a princess. And I'm like, yes, you should, queen. But also, you should be in the power of of wanting to do that for yourself. Because if you depend on somebody else to do that for you, then again, it's just very unpredictable and you just never know where you're gonna end up. But I think the generations before us who were very dependent on a man working, a man making the money, bringing home the bread, basically, it didn't give women any opportunities to do anything with their lives. And then if you're in a relationship and you are dependent on that person, then they can kind of have a lot of power over you. I mean, just to have economic power over someone can be really an easy way into economic abuse. And like, well, you can't do this because I'm the one making the money. Or, well, I don't want to spend it on that because I'm the one. You know what I mean? I think to have control over your own life is so important. And for a lot of women, they can't even like afford to really get a divorce if they're not happy. Or it doesn't even have to be as dramatic as being in an abusive relationship. It could just be a simple fact that I'm not happy. This is not what I want for myself. And then you're sitting there thinking, well, what can I do? You know, I don't have a job, or I took care of the kids and now I'm kind of stuck. And I have a lot of people, you know, I'm just looking at my you know, family, like a standard family, and I see, I think there's some women in there who would have benefited from not being in relationships, but they just couldn't leave because where would they live? Literally. And then, your career just can't leave you. You can always leave your career. You can always change your mind and live a million lives if that's what you want. But then it would be up to you.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing. Okay, let's move on to the loves of your life.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So your first love, I don't think we've had a mode of transport before. tell us why you've chosen this. What is it?
I think this is the best invention. Like, I remember where I was in life when I saw this for the first time. I was in Paris and I just could not believe my eyes. I felt like a child in a candy store. It's these electrical scooters, mm-hmm. that are all over the city. I don't know, they're a little restricted here in London, but where I live in Stockholm, you can kind of take them anywhere.
Really?
Yeah, it's just so convenient and it's so fun and it's quick. It's just, honestly, it brings me so much joy to be standing on an electrical scooter on a sunny day and just going somewhere. Like, I love to go somewhere.
Yeah.
I love to be in the car on the way to something, or I love to be on the plane. Like, the feeling of the feeling of just like going somewhere is really exciting to me. And then to do that on a scooter, come on, like, what's not to love? It's easier than a bike.
Yeah.
You just stand there. I love that I don't have to be responsible for it. When I'm done, I'll just park it in its place and I'll just leave it there. And I think it's absolutely excellent. And I think it works extra well in Stockholm because it's a city built for bikes.
Yeah, so yeah. I was going to say, because you have cycle lanes yeah. and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. it's safe.
It's very safe. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
in London, it's a little bit more complicated, I
yeah.
think.
And there's a lot more people here. And there's yeah. a lot of small roads and, you know, those alleys and all of that. But in Stockholm, it's just perfection.
And what do you make of public transport? Do you avoid it if you can?
Yeah.
I get really anxious on the train and the tube. Like in London, for example, whenever the tube stops mm-hmm. in between stations, which it does all the time, mm-hmm. but every time it does, I'm like, I'm never getting off.
This is it.
And then I do that for about 20 seconds and then it starts moving again. I'm like, I'm fine. I'm fine. And then if it stops again, I'm like, oh my God, this is it.
No, I think happening. I'm, oh no, that's stressful.
Yeah, it is
I think
stressful.
I'm fine with that.
That's good.
Yeah. But I would much rather take the electrical scooters over any sort of tube or bus or taxi or Uber. Like sometimes when I'm going to an interview, they're like, should I put you a taxi? And I'm like, no, I'll take the scooter. I'll yeah, just take it nicer. Anywhere. It is nice. And but I'm lucky though, the tube in Stockholm, it's a lot of it is over the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, most public transport is better when you're not in London, particularly in Europe.
Yeah.
Okay, and your second love is a condiment. Mm-hmm. I keep saying condiment. Is it a condiment? I think so.
I think so. A sauce. It's you know, it's everything to me. It should be
tell us
in
about
everything,
it.
On everything. Soy sauce. I don't know who came up with it. many years ago, somewhere in Asia. It was a genius. Who just said, yeah, let's like ferment these beans. And what came out of it was just liquid gold to me.
When did you begin your love affair with soy sauce?
I think I've always had it.
Really? Even yeah. as a kid? Because it's a very like particular taste for a young...
Is it?
I think so.
What
very
is
salty.
It about it? Salty. Yeah. It's like a little umami.
Yeah. It's a sophisticated
flavor. No.
No?
I think we've always been very Swedish people love Thailand for some reason, and basically in any sort of East Asian food it would be some sort of soy sauce. Maybe not Vietnamese as much, but you know, I love Thai food, I love Chinese food, I love Japanese food, I just love that. And I feel like karma in my life is that I'm with a man who is really allergic to soy.
Really? Oh wow.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate that? Can you just not eat it around him?
No. I do.
Okay.
And I do take him to restaurants, like my favorite Japanese spot, and I'm just like, you're just gonna have to have the chicken with no seasoning and white rice because I have to have all this. But yeah, I just think it's even just a white rice with soy sauce.
Yeah.
Come on. It just adds so much to it. That's really where my heart's at. If there's a dish that has like soy in it, I'm going to love it.
How do you navigate eating when you're traveling and you're on tour and you're constantly kind of moving around? Because that, I think, is so difficult to maintain any kind of routine.
Yeah. It is for me just generally in life, having a routine. But I'm such a creature of habit. So if I know that I like something, I will just kind of stick with that. Mm. And then a noodle is always kind of safe. Mm-hmm. And then when you're out on the road, though, specifically in America, it's kind of hard because at least I'm not a vegan because that's tricky. You know, in certain places, when you're out next to the highway, there's Popeyes, Taco
yeah.
Bell,
fast food,
and McDonald's,
yeah.
you know? But I think...
Do you end up eating that or do you bring your own stuff?
No, I would not bring my own stuff. But I think the kind of tour managers that I've had over the years have been very good at, like, I don't mind eating fast food as long as I get, like, a salad as well, you know? I'm never too hard on myself, like, oh, I can't eat that. I've never had that. But if I only eat like fast food for a week.
Oh, you'll feel gross.
You feel gross. Yeah. And also like, okay, well, if Popeyes was all they had, then I'll take that. And I will make like a smoothie, you know, as well. But yeah, that one is a little tricky. But I think there's always like a little Chinese spot wherever you're at, I feel like.
So always look for that. Always follow the soy sauce. It's a good strategy.
That's what I do.
I mean, I can't cook really, and so soy sauce is my kind of go-to ingredient for any dish.
Yes.
I'm like, it's instantly going to make it taste
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Can you cook?
No.
I'm very, like, very agree. Quick answer.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay. And your third love, I think there are a few different things you could say for this, but I think I'm going to lean towards performing.
Not a surprise.
Yeah. And you kind of touched on this earlier, and you know, you've said that entertaining people and making them happy is kind of like your goal in life.
It really is.
What is it about that makes you so happy, and do you get that the most when you are on stage and like in front of a crowd of people?
I feel really being on the stage is quite a vulnerable place, but I also feel really powerful. And just like anything can happen. And I think it's such a beautiful moment. I also love to be in the crowd. I love to watch concerts. I love to watch shows, theaters, movies, like anything. I love to enjoy whatever's happening in front of me. Because you are creating such a magical experience for people. And I think music, maybe sports in there a little bit, but music is just different. It's just primal in a way that it's almost like a spiritual thing, being together with thousands of people and enjoying a song and singing along with them at the same time. It just really does something to you.
I think it is a spiritual thing. And I also think there's something very special about it now, because when we are in this very kind of digital world, we've kind of lost a lot of the things that I think would make us feel like that before we had smartphones, before we communicated on WhatsApp, before we had Instagram. And it's like going to a festival and seeing a gig, performing and being like having that kind of unity is one of the kind of last remaining things that we hold on to. And sure, everyone's there with their phones or whatever, but you're all there together. Yeah.
And I don't think that's ever going to go away.
Yeah.
I don't think so. We might be standing with our VR goggles in a few years in our rooms, but I still we want that connection with other people and seeing a video, and you can see that there's probably like millions of other people who have enjoyed it. It's not the same as enjoying it with other people. So I just think it's incredible that I have gotten like the opportunity to be that vessel, I guess, in a way of people experiencing great things, at least for a moment. And I think that also it stretches over, like, I just love to make people feel really good. I love to make my friends laugh. I'm such a clown, to the point sometimes where I'm like, be serious. But you know what I mean? Like, be serious for 1 second. But I just think life is about having a great time. At least that's how I feel now, being 25. I'm like, I just want to have a great time.
And do you have kind of role models of female musicians and performers?
I mean, Beyonce is my number one. She's just untouchable to me. She really is something. I mean, what can I even say? Yeah. It's also incredible that she is, you know, so deep into her career, and she's still peaking, and she's still relevant. Not only relevant, but she's still the number one.
Yeah, setting the agenda.
She really is. She's shifting the culture. Yeah. She is not following whatever's going on right now. She's telling us, this is what's going on right now, or this is what will be going on after I release my album and I'm doing this tour. So that's just a talent in itself, I think. And then also that voice, and she just has the star quality of being so, I guess you could say, natural, but she puts in the work, you know?
Oh, definitely.
She's not just waking up and like going on stage and doing that.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
She really puts in the work, but it makes it seem so natural and seamless. She's my number one. And then I just love women with big voices. I grew up listening to Celine Dion, Whitney Houston, Christina Aguilera. Those are my four, like, number one girlies. And I'm just so happy that I get to do this.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any kind of like standout memories from performing in front of a crowd? And like, is there any one song in particular that you really love performing? Mm. And like any kind of, standout moments for you?
I think I love to perform a lot of the album tracks that isn't as popular, because it just feels fun and special to me. And to see the people who know those tracks that aren't necessarily like the hits, it's really fun, because I don't get to do them as much as like Symphony, for example.
Yeah.
But it is so nice to sing a song like that, because the majority of the crowd just sings along with you. So that's a different kind of experience and like feeling when I do that. I really love all of my songs. And I think a really good experience that I've had, when I was doing my tour in South America, specifically Brazil, was just, what are they doing over there? Like,
I think they're just happy.
Yeah, like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Because that crowd, sometimes like, I feel like Swedish people are a bit, maybe just a little bit shy. It's not that they're not enjoying it, but maybe they're a bit concerned about like, oh, I don't want to be too loud. Mm. Because I might disturb the person who's next to me, or I don't, you know, it's really sweet. Yeah, it's very like, oh, don't mind me, you know, that kind of culture. So I think Swedish people enjoy music a lot. We just don't express it like the people in South America, because they go in, they came to have a good time, and you can feel that. So the festivals in Argentina and Brazil have been, they're just up there. Yeah. You know, no one's really touching them as of now.
I need to go. That is it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen to all episodes of Love Lives on all major podcast platforms. You can also watch us on independent TV, all connected devices, and all major social media platforms. I will see you soon. Bye.